Hello, everyone. Good morning. Let's continue to gather. Please take our seats. We're going to try to start our session on time because there's a lot of excellent content for us to deliver and get through. We want to make sure that we maximize the use of our time together. Welcome, everyone. I am sure, like many of you, your minds are just spinning from all the information that has already been delivered to us so far and how it can impact us and our growth and our development and our careers going back to our day-to-day lives going forward. So congratulations to each of you for already getting through almost half of our day today, and we have even more in store for the rest of the day. My name is Jolyn Anderson, and it is my pleasure to welcome you to this session. I am the Chief Diversity Officer for Visa, and I'm really thrilled to be here today to support the advancement of women leaders from across the state and the support of this community. We are really, really proud to be a partner of Watermark and the Conference for Women. And at Visa, the advancement for women is a key priority. And we have a number of global priorities that really help us internally and externally change the landscape and even the playing field for women. And like many, many of the companies here, we at Visa are focused on building the most high-performing workforce fueled by innovation and creativity. And we know that for that to happen, women must absolutely be at the table and being able to help us solve some of the world's most complex payments challenges. It is our delight to sponsor the Watermark Conference, and we are very much aligned with their mission to increase representation of women in leadership roles by empowering them to make their mark in and around their communities, in their companies, in their careers, and in their lives. This conference today is just one of the many exceptional programs that Watermark offers and that we at Visa help support to help women leaders excel, connect, and develop. We encourage you to visit our booth in the exhibit hall to learn more about our company. And more than that, I want to get to the business of hand of thinking about our session today. And I was really, really excited to be part of something called Unwritten Rules for Success. And I don't know if it goes back to something in my childhood where I wanted to be an FBI agent. Perhaps I was inspired by Silence of the Lambs, I think, and Clarice, and I just seemed so, I wanted to be an agent. And I was thinking about it today, one of my other favorite movies also used to be Purple Rain, so I was super, super sad to hear about Prince. I think one of the things that really was interesting and intriguing to me about the idea of being an agent perhaps went back to my experiences of a child growing up in with a father in the military. And so I moved around all the time. And one of the very first things that you had to do that would really chart and define your success of any new neighborhood in school is figure out the rules real quick. And that could mean, and figuring that real quick of who was in, who was out, who were the smart kids, who were the cool kids, who was the neighborhood bully that you just really wanted to avoid, who was the person who was gonna be your best friend on the first day and sit with you at lunch when you knew nobody. Getting all those things down really, really fast was something that I got very good at because I went to so many different schools and grew up in so many different neighborhoods. And I think as I went into corporate America, seeing a lot of those same dynamics play out and translate continued. When you enter into any new corporate environment, you have to learn the rules really fast. And most of the time, they are not in the employee handbook. It is not something that people are going to give you in a PowerPoint and say, this is how you navigate our environment. Oftentimes, this is the title for our panel today, it is unwritten. But I want to let you all know that you've just been drafted into the FBI. And we are gonna have an executive briefing that's gonna tell us what we need to know. The secret rules, we're gonna get the secret handshake, we're gonna learn how to navigate all the environments that we're in. And so I'm really, really excited. And to help us decode all the mysteries of corporate environments, I'm so happy to welcome our speaker for today. Cindy Solomon is a renowned leadership expert with tremendous success in helping both corporations and entrepreneurs compete and win in today's customer-driven economy. She is the best-selling author of two books, Creating a Culture of Courage, and The Rules of Woo, a guide to capturing the hearts and minds of today's customers. We are very fortunate to have Cindy play an integral role in the conference today, not only as a speaker, but as a board member of the Watermark Conference for the Women of Silicon Valley. Please, please give a warm welcome to Cindy Solomon.
Thank you so much. So appreciative of that. I kind of love the FBI vibe thing going on, right? Who didn't want to be Clarice? She was so tough, right? For you under 30, you'll go rent the movie, okay? Stream it later during a break. Amazing morning so far, yes? Yes, we all made it here. That's part of it, right? Showing up. I mean, how many of you on Monday looked at your calendar for the week and you went, oh no, is that this week? Oh, raise your hands, be honest. Thank you, honest people. So that's the hardest thing, right? It's showing up. It's taking the time to do what you need to do to get out of your own head for a second. Listen to some other perspectives. So I'm so proud of you for doing that. That's one of the unwritten rules coming up here. But I wanted to really spend a lot of time talking about how our world is changing. Think about how everything in our world has changed. Think about the level of disruption that we're seeing. Think about a world where, as an example, how many of you remember when this was a map? Anybody? Anybody? Do I have my baby boomers in the room? Thank you. Thank you. For the rest of you, this is what your parents used to get divorced over when you went on a road trip. Just so you remember, just so you know. But think about how much the world has changed. Think about how much disruption we're seeing. It doesn't matter what industry you're in. It doesn't matter if you're in tech or in healthcare. It doesn't matter. How many of you have gone through a reorg, a realignment, a re-anything in the past year? Exactly. That is the new normal. And in order for us to find a way to excel, in order for us to build not just our own careers, but our teams, our organizations, and one would even argue our communities and the world as a whole, we need to figure out how to interact in a world that this is, in fact, the new normal. I was literally, when you think about how much things have changed, did everybody go to the restroom today here in this building? Isn't that a weird question? Don't usually get that from the podium, do you? Yeah. Everybody's like, no, but I should now. Why'd you bring it up? So I'm standing there talking to somebody, and I'm washing my hands, and I go stand over to get the paper towels, and I'm like, did anybody else do this morning? I'm like, what is the deal? And I go to, I'm still stupid, go to the next one. And I'm like, it's the old fashioned kind. Oh, for God's sake, they expect us to pull these out of here now? What? I could have still been in there. Thank God somebody was like, no, it's one of the old ones. Okay, thanks. Thanks for that. So you think about how much our world has changed and how we need to figure out a way to still excel in it. And I think that the example that you brought up earlier was so true. You walk into an organization and people start telling you the rules, right? And early on at the beginning of our careers, the rules were pretty easy. They were really simple. You think about it, right? One was you put in the time. Rule number one, you gotta put in the time. Did you get this on your first couple of jobs? Never get to work after your boss. Always get there before your boss and never leave until your boss leaves, right? Yeah, it's a stupid rule. But we paid attention to it, right? We all paid attention to it. And it really was about putting the time in, understanding the industry, putting in the hard work and the heavy lifting. Then again, at the beginning of our careers, it was about achieving the goals. Ticket to entry. You got to be able to hit the numbers. It doesn't matter what part of the organization you're in, you have to be able to hit the goal. And now for most of us, that's just simply ticket to entry. Doing a great job is ticket to entry. And then at the beginning of our careers, the other thing that we got great at was saying yes to everything. How many of you feel exactly like this on the inside right now, right? Because we say yes to everything. We say yes to helping the C player who needs help. We say yes to mentoring the world. We say yes to planning the birthday party and making sure somebody gets a card and putting it around the room. Whatever, we say yes to it all. And my question to you is now that you're at a certain stage in your career, how's that working out for you, right? Have any of you been this woman who comes into work on a Monday morning and she finds out that Tom got the promotion? And I love you guys, three guys. Love you. Love you. And you're sitting there going, seriously? Seriously? How's that even possible? And I think it's because of something that an amazing speaker, if you didn't get to see him yet this morning, I think he's got another session this afternoon, Marshall Goldsmith says, but what got us here won't get us there. All of those things that we thought about and that were so vitally important at the beginning of our career, they're kind of ticket to entry now. And I think it actually shifts what you need to be focusing on and what you need to do shifts over a career. Now let's just do another truth test. How many of you have been working in corporations or in your own company for at least 10 years? Raise your hands up high. Raise them really high. 15 years. 20 years. Start looking around the room. 25 years. I'm just going to stop at 25 and go, you guys look fabulous. I know everybody was like, is she going to keep going? I'm going to need to get my walker out and go up to the front. Tell her to stop. I mean, think about that. A quarter of this room is 25 years plus. There's nothing we haven't seen. There's nothing we haven't done. But do you remember that moment at the beginning of your career? Or in a new job, even in a new role, something that's new to you. Do you remember how you walk into the room that first morning? You're so excited. You're all bright and shiny. The world is your oyster, right? There's nothing that's impossible. There's this great quote that says, in the mind of a beginner, all things are possible. In the mind of an expert, only a few. And I think one of the things that happens to us as we reach a certain level or a certain age or a certain trajectory in our career path is we forget to be a beginner again. And we think the things that have happened before will continue to hold true into the future. And in the work that we do, we work with clients of varying industries, varying sizes. And what my company does is we do large-scale leadership programs, primarily focused on customer experience. So we work with tens of thousands of leaders a year, trying to help them navigate through corporate cultures in order to create exceptional service for their customers. But what we have found out during that process has been amazing. And we've actually now interviewed over 6,000 people for this work. All genders, all countries, all companies, all industries, all ages. And it's actually expanded out now quite a bit. We've even started to do some interviews with children and teens, trying to understand what is that thing that sets successful people apart? What is courage? How is it that some people make really bold moves, whether it's in their career or within an organization or a product launch or whatever it might be? What is it that allows them to do that? What's the secret sauce, if you will? And we've discovered an extraordinary amount of information, particularly around courageous leadership. Because what we have found as we've interviewed people about what holds you back or what propels you is it keeps coming back to this idea of fear versus courage, courage versus fear. So what I wanted to share with you today is a little bit about what we've learned in that research that is for everyone. It's not gender-based. What we have learned about great leaders when they think about courage is it's entirely personal. Nobody can tell you what takes courage for you to do or not do. Have you ever had somebody, well, I'll give you a silly example. How many of you, public speaking, not your favorite thing? Raise your hands. Excellent, come on up. No, I'm kidding. Look at you though, good for you getting up. Usually people either like freeze solid or they turn to their neighbor and go, she's pointing at you. So well done, you almost got up. Now her face is all red, breathe, it's okay. She's sweating now, it's okay, good, good. Very well done. I just do that just to make fun of people, so thank you for that. It's my fun up here. But so for you, you would have done it. You actually moved, which is huge. Normally people just freeze up, stop, and they're like, I've now lost my mind and I hear ringing in my ears and I think I'm gonna pass out, and then they just fall over. It's really fun, I enjoy it. But for me, the happiest, calmest I ever am is right here. The only thing that would make me happier and calmer is if I got to be on the big stage. Just saying, in case anybody wants me up there. Oh, thank you, thank you. Start my fan club, exactly. The more people, the better for me. This is the happiest and calmest that I ever am. Terrifying, I know. Now for you to get up here, you were getting up, so you would have come up here. But how would you have felt?
Not great.
Yeah. I thought she wasn't able to speak for a minute. Yeah, she was like, ah. Not great. You would have been, you know, flushed and hot and, you know, right? I could tell you that nothing bad's going to happen to you here. No one's going to hurt you. Does that make you less afraid? No. Everybody in the room is going, no, keep talking. It doesn't matter. If you have that fear, it's going to take courage for you to take action. There's a wonderful quote that says, courage is not the absence of fear, it's the ability to move ahead in spite of your fear. One of the things that we found is so extraordinary is how many times have you had somebody come up to you and say, wow, how did you do that? That took so much courage. And you're like, what? Okay, weird, thanks, huh? It's because nobody can tell you what takes courage for you. That if you've ever, have you ever tried to talk a kid out of being afraid? How's that work out? Right? Yeah, you can't do it. because it's entirely personal. So that's the first thing we learned about courage and courageous leadership. Second thing we learned is that most of us think we aren't. And this blew my mind. We'll do a test right now. How many of you believe you're courageous? Raise your hands. Well, that's pretty good. There's a couple of you in the back going, I don't know, do you think I'm courageous? I don't know, what do you think? I don't know, maybe, well, if she is, then I definitely am, right? If that's the process you went through, that doesn't count, okay? Probably about 50% of you raised your hands. Now, I'm going to ask you to do the hardest thing a speaker can do. I'm going to ask you to close your eyes. Close your eyes for me. I'm at the front of the room. I can see you. Close your eyes. Thank you. How many of you believe you're courageous? Raise your hands up really high. Really, really, really high. Okay, now I want you to open your eyes and look around. Almost 100% of you raise their hands. So here's what's interesting. In most of the work that I do, I'm usually speaking in front of a mixed gender audience. I am usually speaking to senior executive audiences, which are usually primarily male. That's a whole other speech, but whatever. You're with me. Primarily male. What happens in an all-male audience when I ask that question? Are you courageous? I'm courageous, and I'm more courageous than him and him and totally that guy back there. But what happens when I ask them to close their eyes? Almost 50% of them pull their hands down. So what we discovered in all of this research is that there was only one statistically significant finding, and it related to gender. Women are taught that you're not courageous. And if you are, don't tell anyone. Men are taught that equally destructive, they darn well better be courageous. And if you aren't, don't tell anyone. Did I do that right? That's like the hardest thing I do all day. Okay, good. It's very confusing. I need a chart and yeah. But think about that. Think about how that plays out in the workplace. What happens if I turn to this young woman here and I say, you have done such a fantastic job? She's like, yes, just don't make me get up there. Yes, fantastic job. And we're gonna give you a double level promotion. Now it's gonna be a stretch and people are gonna be kind of freaked out, but well, I'll have your back, you'll be fine. What would most people say? Most women say? No thanks. She's like, no thanks. No, I don't want. And most women do. There's some kind of melting thing that happens to us. We're like, oh, that's so sweet of you, but I don't think I'm ready. I don't know. Do you think I need more training? I'm not sure. I don't want to disappoint you. Oh my God. Right? Thank you. We've all seen it, right? What does a guy do in that scenario? Awesome. Do I get more money? Cool. I want a car too. Love you guys, but it's true. He's like, totally, am I right? Absolutely. Absolutely. So, and that's why when these stats come out, they're not surprising or shocking to anyone. A woman will only apply for a job that she wants if she has 7 of the 10 qualifications. How many does a guy need? Usually none. But no, the research shows 3. Love you. Love you. Usually 3. And what we're finding out about this, the research is showing us that it's a hardwired situation. It's not that they have an inflated sense of self. It's not that at all. It's actually that their brain assesses potential by thinking about their potential. Women assess our potential based on what we've accomplished to date and what we've done in the past. So think about that. Think about how frequently you haven't applied for something because you don't think you're ready. You don't have all the qualifications. But the reality is, that's our brain trying to deceive us. Because we should also be looking at our potential through that lens. But the thing that was shocking about this is when push comes to shove and you really interview people one-on-one, only 36% of people believe they are truly courageous. And that's simply not true. 100% of us are courageous. And we're courageous every day. You all were courageous just getting here. Choosing to be here for the day took courage. Getting here, if you drove, you insane people, took courage to get here. So we are all courageous. And once you start to understand that, it changes the equation. And the other thing that our research showed is that courage is a skill that anyone can learn, and it is the true differentiator. It's what enables you to make the leap to doing something different. It enables you to go for that job where you might not feel you're qualified yet. It enables you to do things like stand up on stage in front of 500 people when you're asked to, because you battle back with that courage muscle. When we did these interviews, we discovered that there were 4 types of courage. And we don't have time to go into these today, but I just wanted to talk very briefly about them. Blind courage, role courage, core courage, and crisis courage. And because I don't have time in today's session to go through these, I want you to be able to have them, though. So if you text to that number, 855-910-8055, text the word watermark, I'll send you the courage quick guide. And it'll have all the information about the courage types. Because what we discovered in this research is that every one of us has a courage type that we're most comfortable with. I myself am most comfortable with blind courage. Blind courage is exactly what it sounds like. Close my eyes, jump, excellent! And I discovered in this research was transformative for me because I found out I was a blind courage addict, absolutely addicted to the adrenaline rush of jumping. And it was transformative to me because at the time that we did this research, I had four companies I was running because a blind courage addict has a little bit of ADD. Because I'm like, oh, look, something shiny. Wait, a kitty. Wait, no, something else shiny. Here's how you know if you're a blind courage addict, you say this phrase a lot. That sounds like fun. Any other blind courage addicts out there? Excellent. Hi, my name is Cindy. I'm a blind courage addict. Welcome. So knowing your type of courage is really important. Knowing what you're comfortable with and making a conscious choice about what type of courage you need. You exhibited blind courage when I called on you and you actually got up, right? I am exhibiting role courage because I enjoy what I do. I'm trained in doing it. I do it a lot, and there's a lot of muscle memory involved in it. So knowing that and being able to implement that and knowing what kind of courage your team needs or your organization needs is huge, particularly, oh, that sounded like Donald Trumpish, didn't it? He ruined that word for me now. Huge. Sorry. Again, you just never know what's going to happen up here. So it's really important to understand that, understand what your team needs, understand what maybe your peers need in order to feel comfortable to take that courageous leap. But what I really wanted to talk about today is the unwritten rules that we discovered in this research. Now, as I mentioned, most of the work that I do is with senior leadership teams. And we talk a lot about courageous innovation and how you create cultures of courage within your organization, how you create courageous leadership within your company so that you can invent and innovate on behalf of customers, et cetera. But what came out of this research that was wholly unexpected was that there were some really specific unwritten rules that men spoke of that women never did. When we talked about what is it that's made you successful? Why have you been able to achieve what you've achieved? How have you gotten that promotion? How have you asked for the stretch assignment? And what floored me is that these unwritten rules were a little bit different than what they were at the beginning of your career. The beginning of your career, you're kind of trying to figure out the politics, and there's usually individual company unwritten rules. But what we're discovering is the higher up the ladder you go, and I'll be interested to see what you guys think of this, higher up the ladder you go, these unwritten rules become ever more important. And I believe that they're the reason that women are dropping out at mid-career, because we just get so tired of seeing it happen over and over again, and we don't understand why. Because the things that we used to do, working harder than anybody, saying yes to everything, showing up, aren't working for us anymore. So I'd be curious to see what you think about these. So the first is you gotta own your own strengths. And this was something when you, and I ask you to try it out in your workplace, go to a male peer, say, John, tell me what your strengths are. More than likely, he'll be thankful that you asked. I'm so happy you asked, I've been meaning to share them with you anyway. Here they are. Here they are, let me share, and I'm gonna go on until you stop me, right? So let me keep sharing them. So generally, men are really great and totally comfortable sharing what they're good at. How do we feel when we do that? What's the word we always say? Let's be humble. What was the other one back here? Painful. It's painful. What else? What is it? Oh my gosh, you're sharing your strengths. You're bragging, show off. Oh, isn't that horrible? Never once have you ever heard a guy say, oh, I don't mean to brag, but no, just doesn't happen, does it? Right? He's like, totally, I'm in. He's like, why did you make me go to the session? I know. Right in the front row. But we are not great at sharing our strengths. And yet, think about this. Imagine that I own a company. Ooh, look, I do. That's so fun. Imagine I own a company. And I'm going to hire all of you. You have exactly 1 minute to tell me what you're going to do to contribute to my business. What do women usually say when I ask your strengths? I'm not going to ask you because you'll be good at this. What are your strengths?
Everybody's like, well, I don't know. I'm happy. I'm a good team player. I'm organized.
Right? What else? Say again. Energetic. What? Excellent. What else? Smart. Problem solving. Excellent. Better. Strategic. Good one. Who said that? Excellent. Excellent. I love those big words. Yeah. I get things done, right? Okay. All good. Those are all good skills. But you have to tell me what they do to impact the business. Teamwork is one of my favorite ones. Or good, I'm a good communicator. Good communicator. Okay, how many of you? Good communicators. I hope so, because otherwise you're a sociopath, okay? Actually, no, sociopaths are really good communicators. I have Clarice on the brain now. You've done that to me, right? Anthony Hopkins was such a good communicator. Wacko! Okay, but I digress. But think about it. Good communicator. I don't care. You better be a good communicator. What does that do for me in the business? I'm extraordinarily good at taking people with disparate opinions, having them feel heard, come together, and help them problem solve to a quick outcome. That's being a good communicator. Doesn't that sound a little bit different than I'm good at teamwork and communication? Do you see what I'm saying? We have to be great at owning what our strengths are, identifying them and knowing them, first and foremost. We're really good at the other side of this coin, which is awful. How many of you suck at things? And how many of you could tell them to me right now? Right? We're all good at that. We're like, oh, I'm really bad at these five things, and I'll explain why now. Right? I don't care about those things. I need to know what you're great at and how it impacts the business. That's where we miss out. The second part about this is you need to be comfortable with that information rolling off your tongue at any moment. If you get into the elevator with your CEO tomorrow and he says, what do you do here? You don't do, I'm in marketing, or I'm in sales, or I'm in HR, right? You want to say, what I do here is I help the organization build their business through. Boom, boom, boom. You need to feel comfortable sharing that information far and wide, because unless I know what you're good at, I can't use you for it to help me. You're a human asset that I want to deploy in the most effective way. So that's number one. Number two on this piece of the puzzle, that's actually three, I can't count. I'm not good at math, I know that. Own your own strengths, know what you're good at, be able to articulate it in a way that impacts the business, and get used to saying it all the time. Practice on your friends, drive your spouses crazy, but practice all the time. This is something that we could learn from millennials. How many millennials under 33 in the room? Excellent. I love you guys. There's a lot of you. Yay. You actually are much better at this compared to older generations. But I think that we've been working on you long enough where we'll beat that out of you. So we need to have you help us do it the other way around. So that's first and foremost, unwritten rule number one. Unwritten rule number two is relationships are the priority. Things get done in companies through relationships. If there's a job posted at a senior level, it's already filled. Right? We all know it. It's all about the relationships. And for women, because we have a lot on our plates, this is one of the hardest things to prioritize. It's like showing up here. Do you know that on average, these conferences have a 30% no-show rate? 30%. And you know how it happens. It almost happened to you this morning. You're like, no, I have to drive all the way there. Ah! Right? But we opt out of doing things that help our own development and that could create relationships for us. Anybody who is a senior executive knows that it is all about the relationships, and that needs to be prioritized on an equal basis to the work. How many of you hate networking? I do. We all do. But why are you networking? And are you actually suffering through the networking with the right tools at the right time with the right people, right? It's simply being able to walk up to somebody and say, hey, here's who I am, and here's what I do. I'm really good at this. This is where you can apply your strengths. What is it that you do? And for those of us who have been around the block a little bit, and my walker that's parked over here will tell you, those of us who have been around the block know that it's in that one phone call where you can get a hold of somebody, they pick up the phone, and you can get stuff done. That's what careers are built on, particularly as you go up the ladder. So it's finding a way to get comfortable with the discomfort of going after that in a strategic way. Third unwritten rule is sitting at the table isn't enough. And I know, especially here in the Valley, how many of you usually are the only woman or one of a couple sitting at the table? Isn't that fun? Yeah, get asked to take the notes a little, do you? Yeah, isn't that awesome? And you sit there and you're like, do I want to blow myself up right now? Yes, okay. Let me tell you the trick to this. We've been doing a ton of research on this because I just could not believe it was true. Sitting at the table isn't enough. You need to be able to find a way to show up in a different way. Now let's just ask a couple of questions. When you walk into a meeting room, what are you carrying? What are you carrying? Look around your feet. What are you carrying? You got a purse, you got a backpack, you probably got a computer case. And you know, if you're a mom, you also have saltines, a can of soup, a granola bar, some gummy bears, probably some vitamins stuck to the bottom of the purse. You've got it all, right? Because you got some handy wipes. There's nothing that you don't have with you, right? Our research is showing that when you walk into the room with all that stuff, men see it as baggage. Men see you as disorganized, because you've got all this stuff, and the purse is falling off, and you're trying to figure out where to put the other stuff, and you think you need the computer, and now you don't want the computer, right? We all look that way. Men perceive us as being disorganized and ill-equipped right out of the gate. And they're not doing this intentionally. It's just the way their brains work. What do men bring into meetings? What do you bring into your meeting? Piece of paper, very good. That's impressive. What do you bring into a meeting? Nothing. He's literally like me. It's all I need. No, I have no idea who you are. I'm so sorry. I'm just going to totally make fun of you all day. But most men bring in a phone. What happens when I need somebody to take notes? Who am I going to look at? The woman who's got the iPad, the computer, the notepaper, she's already given paper to somebody else, she's got an extra notebook, she's got 5 pens, she's got a highlighter, which thank God, I didn't know I needed one of those, right? So we're seeing that even just the entrance into the room makes a difference. Now here's the other finding that blew my mind, and we're gonna publish something on this soon because we gotta get the numbers big enough to make sure it's true. But what we're discovering is when women introduce ourselves, and you've done it probably 100 times today, how do you introduce yourself? Hi, my name is Cindy. Jolynn, there you go, see? We say first names, right? You very rarely say, you know, hi, I'm Cindy Solomon. You know, it's just like, you know, hi, I'm Jane, whatever it is, right? What we're discovering is that the way men's brains work, they are constantly level setting, constantly. They are sorting unconsciously in their brains who's important, who's not, who do I need for this piece of information? And it's a very linear process. When you walk into a meeting room, especially with people you don't know, and you walk in and say, hi, I'm Cindy, I'm with marketing, you have instantly become invisible to them. Invisible to such an extent that when they leave the meeting, these are the focus groups we're doing currently, when they leave the meeting, they, number one, can't remember where you were sitting. They won't know the color of your hair, whether you had glasses on or not. No remote idea about what your name was. And even if you speak up in the meeting, they don't hear you. Have you guys ever had that thing happen where you're like, I have this great idea, A, B, C, and everybody's like, and then the guy four down from you says it in 5 minutes, everybody's like, oh my God, Joe's a genius. Ever had that happen to you? We're discovering that it might be something as simplistic as how you walk into the room and what you say. Not using a title. And I know we're in Silicon Valley where your titles are like wacky. You know, hi, I'm Cindy Solomon. I'm vice president of, you know, Kumbaya, Cha-Chaing, and the Starlight Express. It doesn't fit on the card, but you get the idea, right? But if we don't use our title, and women are so uncomfortable doing this. I work with a chief HR officer in one of my companies, and she's like, I will not say my title. I just won't. And we did an experiment with her and her senior team. And in an industry event, senior people in an industry event, and the way they treated her was significantly different when she used her title walking in the door. So that's another thing that we have to get comfortable with. And even if you're not comfortable using your title, or if your title makes no sense whatsoever and nobody will know what you do anyway if you use your title, talk about why you're there. I'm in charge of 5,000 people whose role is to develop the X, Y, and Z product. I'm in charge of US sales for A, B, and C. I am in charge of. If you use words like with, just remember you're invisible. You might as well not be there. So that's the third thing that we found out. The other thing that, and this happened, I did a panel for the Watermark Conference, or it wasn't the Watermark Conference, but the Conference for Women in Boston. And Melody Lee, who is the worldwide brand strategist for Cadillac, was on my panel. And if you ever have a chance to see her, she's amazing. She's 36 years old, she's 4'11", and she scares me to death. It's awesome. She's just crazy. She's a crazy woman. And we asked what her unwritten rules were, and she said, well, I only have two. One is I always sit to the right of my boss. Always. I get there early, I wait to see where he sits, and I sit to his right. And she said that she's experimented with sitting around the table in other places, and the difference in how she is viewed by her boss and others is significant. The second thing she does is she only brings her phone in. Only brings her phone in, that's it. If she wants to take notes, she'll take the notes on the phone. But that's it. That's all she has with her. Even to the extent of she'll leave her bag with a secretary outside, or you know, put it under a chair somewhere in the room, etc. She carries all. She's got two little kids. She's got 15 bags, but she hides them and gets there early before anybody shows up. So we have to not just have a seat at the table, but we need to own it in a different way. We need to make sure people are clear about why we're there, who we are, and how we contribute to the conversation. The other piece of this, and I don't think we could talk about it today, but the other piece of this that I think is interesting is those microaggressions, being spoken over, not being heard. I'm going to suggest only one thing about that. Stop raising your hand. I hate to interrupt. How many of you do that, right? Because you're trying to be polite. The other thing is, I'll give you two things on that. Stop raising your hand and stop apologizing for speaking. I'm sorry to interrupt. Oh, I didn't mean to. Oh, are you done? Oh, I'm sorry. Okay, right? Quit using so many words for things. Those little tips will make a difference in how you're perceived in those moments. The other piece of this is if you get great at talking about your strengths, that strength statement can be how you introduce yourself. That'll also help you get really comfortable with it. The fourth piece is that you're in charge of building your executive presence. And I really hesitated to use the phrase executive presence, because how many of you have had that feedback in a review and you're like, bite me? I have no idea what that means. Do you think you have executive presence? You don't. I do. I don't know what it is, but I've got me some. Right? We've all had that information given to us and with no explanation of what it is, and it's kind of different for everybody. And what does it really mean? Well, I'm here to tell you executive presence is a real thing. And I believe it's really simple. It's the first three things we talked about, and it's getting great at being comfortable doing things that make you uncomfortable. If you hate, almost this whole room raised your hand that you hate public speaking. Get out there and learn how to public speak. Learn how to suck it up and get through it. I work with a CEO, I do just a couple of coaching clients a year, and I work with a CEO who is so terrified, and if I said his name, you would be blown away by this fact. He is so terrified at public speaking, and he has to do it every single day, that he literally throws up before he goes on stage every time, like clockwork. It's not pretty. His poor assistant, I feel so bad for her. But he does it. He still gets up there, and you would never know that he hated it. So find a way to go after those things that are hard for you, so you can be comfortable with the discomfort of doing them. The other things that come up in executive presence is we don't know what she does. We're not sure, you know, why she's here. Why is she in this meeting? We don't see her results. Executive presence is being comfortable not just sharing your strengths and what you're great at, but even more importantly, it's about being able to share your results. One of the things that I think helped my corporate career, because I'm a recovering corporate executive, took me a number of years to get over it, but I did. I was pretty much unmanageable. Can you see me inside of a corporation? Thank God it was the 80s and 90s because I was the only woman, so they couldn't fire me. So I think they just kept promoting me. It was awesome. My career path, Cindy Solomon 101. But when something that a manager told me when I was very young in my career, he said, I'm not going to know what you've done unless you tell me. And he got me habituated into doing a weekly, at that point, it was like a weekly handwritten thing. I said, God, how old am I? I am so old. A weekly handwritten thing, but it could be a weekly email that talked about my accomplishments, or at least talked about the things that I was working on that were of interest. Because then when they get behind closed doors and they're talking about an opportunity, that information is already in somebody's head. The other piece of this that I think is all entwined in all of this, and I'm sure you're going to hear this word 100,000 times over the next 6 hours being here, is mentorship. Go find yourself a mentor. Well, I'm going to say something politically incredibly incorrect. I don't think mentorship works. Because here's how we approach it. Will you be my mentor? I want you to tell me everything about everything. We're going to meet 8 hours a week. It's going to be awesome, right? You need a sponsor. And you need a lot of them. And you need them on different topics. And how you build executive presence is finding somebody who can help you gain comfort with the things that you're uncomfortable with. Bite-sized mentoring, I call it micro-mentoring. Find a micro-mentor on something. Somebody who's great at presentations. Go to them when you've got a presentation coming up and saying, I want 30 minutes of your time. Can you help me with this presentation? Give me your insight. Nobody's gonna say no to that. Somebody's gonna say no to mentoring you for the rest of your life. But they won't say no to that micro-mentoring opportunity. And that also flips back to, it'll help you own your strengths. It'll give you a seat at the table and help you own it. It'll help you build relationships across the organization. And really, that is what executive presence is, isn't it? It's knowing who to go to when. It's having the knowledge that builds credibility. And it's having the relationships that know you've got the knowledge that gives you the credibility. That's so vital in the work that we're doing now. How many of you work in one of those horrible matrixed organizations, right? Right, where it's like nobody's really responsible, but you're all responsible. Nobody has a decision-making authority, so go ahead, but don't do that, right? Yeah, you can't get anything done. And if you're in one of those organizations, that ability to build and use those relationships before you need them are essential. And I was listening to Sherry, who was with Cisco, up on this panel earlier in this room, and she said, you need people who, when the doors are closed, are always talking about your accomplishments. But until you tell people what they are, they can't do that for you. So those, and this was amazing to me, is the gender split on this is almost 100%. Guys do all of these things almost intuitively. And when you try to get them to explain it, they're like, yeah, of course I can do these things. This is what I do all the time. They put a priority on relationships from the very beginning of their careers. They spend time focusing on that as a priority. And for us, it's harder, isn't it? Now, I want to leave you with a thought, and then I'm going to open it up for questions. I want to leave you with a thought. And I think that when you go to these things, and I think you mentioned it when you came up and introduced me, your brain is going to be filled with all these great things, right? You're going to go back to work tomorrow, and people are going to be like, oh, did you go to one of those things? Right? And sometimes it's kind of overwhelming because you also listen to a lot of the women that we hear from, especially on the panels, who are so accomplished and they've got, you know, the senior executive vice president, they've got 5 kids and, you know, they run triathlons and they, you know, and then you're just like, I just am so depressed now, I'm gonna go out and lay down, right? I've got one of those on my panel today at 3 if you wanna see like a true rock star in Silicon Valley. And I was like, well, what do you do for fun? And she's like, I build algorithms. Okay. I feel stupid now too. Okay, lazy and stupid. Anyway, a little self-talk. So you're gonna find out all these things and you're gonna wanna go back and try them and you're not gonna be great at them. And what do we usually do when we're not great at something? You stop. You go, well, that was stupid. I'm not doing that again. I learned the best leadership lesson I have ever had in my life from a bunch of 2.5-year-olds at Deer Valley Resort. I took my family skiing a couple of winters ago, and we did, it's a great baby boomer vacation because baby boomer parents, you know, we had kids, threw them into a closet with some kibble for 20 years and they were fine. You Gen Xers and you'd like want to have kids and see them grow up. It's so weird. Anyway, so skiing is the perfect baby boomer vacation because you can send your kid off on a lesson, they exhaust them, and then you get them back and all they want to do is fall down. It's awesome. So I sent my daughter up on a lesson. At the end of the day, all the kids come down to the bunny slope and the parents pick them up. So there are thousands of kids, hundreds of parents, hundreds of instructors, and I'm about halfway up the hill waiting for my daughter to come down. And there's a little group of like 2 to 2.5-year-olds in front of me. And all the kids get picked up except this one little girl. And I think she's a little girl because she's in a pink snowsuit, right? And they're so tired at that point, you know, their little arms are sticking out like this and they have the little mittens sewn to their sleeves and one mitten's off. And at Deer Valley, they make them wear these stupid huge helmets. And they're so tired at the end of the day that they like look over here and their heads go like this, right? And I watch this little girl spy a little bump about 20 feet down from her. And I see her ooch her little matchstick skis around, and she ooches and she ooches, and she gets to the bump and she jumps up to catch air, right? She jumps up and she falls down and she's all twisted and she's giggling and she's laughing. And you know how limber they are? Like, she's got a foot over here, you know, and a ski down here. And these stumpy little arms, so they can't get themselves up. And so, and some genius has invented this. I wish it would have happened before my daughter learned to ski. Some little genius has invented this mesh vest that goes on the outside of the snowsuit, and it zips up and it has a handle on the back. So you pick them up and you shake them out. You can carry them around. So cool. It is so cool. So this little girl's laying there, and she's giggling and she's laughing, and she rolls her head to her instructor and she goes, "Mar." The instructor is like, "Oh, where are these parents?" He takes the skis off and he tromps down the hill and he picks her up and he shakes her out and he brings her back up the hill. And he puts her like 5 feet higher. He sets her down again. She ooches, she ooches, she jumps, catch air, falls down, giggles, laughs, more. He's like, "Seriously?" Down, shakes her out, takes her back up. And each time he's getting her a little farther up the hill, right? So a little farther up the hill, lets her go again. She does this not three times, not four times. On the fifth time, my daughter shows up and she's like, "Come on, let's go." And I was like, "Shut up, I'm watching something." Six times, seven times. On the eighth time, she actually gets a lot of momentum going. She gets up in the air and she gets about that high off the ground and she nails it. And she's so excited that she flips her helmeted head around and the weight takes her right down into the snow. But that was the best leadership lesson ever, because she was trying something new and failing at it miserably. Eight times, one would argue, but seven times for sure. Failing at it miserably. But every time she failed, she just laid there and giggled and laughed and said more. So when you go into your meeting and you introduce yourself with your new strength statement, and people around you go, "Have you had a stroke? What's going on with you? What's wrong? What happened to you yesterday? What did they do to you? Did they break you?" When you do that, or it feels goofy, or you trip around on it, if you giggle and laugh and say more, and then go 5 more feet farther up the hill to try it again, to me, that's what creates a courageous career. To me, that's what creates courageous organizations and teams and leaders. And frankly, isn't that the place you want to work? Isn't that the person you would want to work for? That's what's amazing about this, is the better we get at these things, the better everyone around us gets. There's a wonderful quote I want to leave you with that says, "Everything you want is just outside your comfort zone." So go back, take one or two of the things that you learn over this whole day, and try a couple of these. And understand that you're not going to be perfect the first time, but you eventually will be that little girl, and you will nail it. Thank you all so much for being here. I'm so appreciative of the time. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. And I'm happy to take questions. We've got about 10 minutes. Happy to take any questions. Don't be afraid. Excellent. Come on. Feel free to line up and grab a mic.
Amazing. Hi. Presentation.
Thank you. Tell me who you are.
So I'm Wendia. I run a digital marketing company. Nice. Been working with Goldman Sachs for the past 5 years.
Excellent.
The 10,000 Small Business Initiative and with Google SMB as well.
Very good. Did you see that? That's how it's done. Very well done. Thank you. What's your question?
Two questions, yes. Actually. The first one was part of the, have you found that women tend to stop women for the same five reasons, for example, that you gave, such as showing off your strengths? A lot of women in
question.
High positions feel like they're like, don't show off, don't brag.
Yeah.
And then the second, you know, you mentioned that people should push themselves out of their comfort zones. And I felt, I was curious where you stand on focusing on your strengths.
Yeah.
For example, really bad at selling brooms door to door.
Right.
But I'm brilliant at building digital marketing systems.
Exactly, exactly.
So I'm like, would I push myself into my uncomfort zone,
no,
selling brooms just because it's uncomfortable?
Right. That is a perfect question. I'm going to take the second one first. So well done on the question. Second question first. Should I focus on getting uncomfortable against my weaknesses? Don't do that. Get uncomfortable with something that you know you need for the work you're doing. So as an example, let's say that I'm okay at public speaking in front of small groups, but not big groups. I need to work, I need to be comfortable with the discomfort of getting to those bigger groups. So don't, my philosophy is we are fully baked. There's nobody in this room who's like 12, and so your weaknesses are your weaknesses. Don't focus on those. Focus on honing your strengths, getting masterful at them, upping your game in those, and then go find a place where you can use that. So that's the second question. The first question is, and this is, I'd love to hear other people's opinion about this, but my belief on the women who say, don't brag, that's not okay, don't do that, I think that happens every day. And I think it particularly happens if somebody's been brought up in a corporate culture where we've not been taught to do that. I think there's two things for that. I don't think women consciously do it. I think it's an unconscious bias on their part. So that's number one. Number two is we need to help those women understand what we're doing and help them get better at it. I believe one of the reasons that we're held back, I mean, all we hear about is these women's initiatives, women's initiatives, women's initiatives. And it's because we take like 12 women and we put them through this year-long thing, right? Like those 12 are gonna fix the whole thing. We need all the women talking the same language, all of them practicing these skills so that we can help each other. So I think number one, don't let a woman say that to you without taking her aside very kindly and saying, let me tell you why I do that. And we need to help her get better at doing it for herself. So great questions. Yes.
Okay, pretty quick one.
And you are?
I'm Kathy. Oh, see,
Kathy. Ah.
Yes, I manage relationships for Intel.
Excellent.
Okay, so virtual environments. How do we do this in a virtual environment? Because so many of us are on the phone all day long, you know. How do you do it?
So I think there's two things. One is you build relationships outside of the call. So finding a way to pre-sell ideas, talking to people about what they're working on outside of the actual conference call. So that's number one. Number two is get visual. Find ways to use Skype or whatever other tool that you can use where you're actually physically seeing people.
I told my team I need a 24-hour notice if they want a Skype call.
I'm totally with you. I have that same thing. I have to have 24-hour notice with client calls, but my team knows they're going to see me in a baseball hat. Just the way it works. But I think in a virtual environment, these things are even more important because it's harder to gauge when you're not physically there. So that was a great question. Thank you. One more. Oh, and then we'll go over here. Two more. Yeah.
Martha Lockmeyer-Pomez. I work for San Diego Gas and Electric as a lead for equipment engineering.
Excellent. Cool. And, that just sounds tough, doesn't it?
Does.
Yeah.
I tend to come across too tough.
No. And there's nothing
so
like that.
I've
but
had a lot of backlash from, I think mostly with the women there that are in leadership positions.
Interesting.
Saying that I'm too aggressive, too confrontational. And I don't see this. And when I ask my male counterparts, do you see this in me? They say, no, don't see it.
Yeah.
So that's been a really big struggle of mine. And so when you say don't apologize for asking a question or whatever,
right,
I'm actually having to try to do that in order to
make them stop
make myself that. Sound softer.
Right. Okay, a couple of things. So you just described perfectly the double-edged sword that we all, the tightrope, whatever metaphor you want to use or analogy, it's the tightrope we all walk. You know, if we're aggressive, you know, if a guy's aggressive, good, he's a pro, competitive, right? If we're aggressive, we're, you know, what we are. not going to say it, but it rhymes with witch. So I think there's a couple of things. One is, if that woman or the women who are giving you that feedback don't control your career, don't worry about it. So that's number one. Number two is, the only person you really need to be concerned with is how successful that behavior is for you, and if it's successful, continue to do it. Now, I also believe, I used to get this hit, as you can imagine, a lot in my corporate career. I believe there's an element of truth in everything, and we can always get a little bit better with our communication. Sometimes it's just using slightly different words at the beginning, but don't change simply because somebody's telling you to, unless you believe it will make you more effective. Does that make sense? Would you guys agree with that?
Thank you.
Yeah. And if you do report to one of those women who is telling you that, then yeah, then it's a different, slightly different conversation, right? But if not, I don't care. She's like going to be calling me going, well, I tried what you said and I need a job now. Okay. One more question.
Thank you so much, Cindy. I am Jin Zhang. I lead a product innovation for CA Technologies.
Nice.
It's my desire to be serving in the C-suite for larger corporations as a role model for a lot of underrepresented segments.
Excellent.
What I've wanted to ask you is about negotiation. What I've discovered here is, despite the four things you taught us about, the higher you get up, the more opportunity you're looking for, the better you have to be about negotiation. And sometimes you really have to push it despite the fact that you have the network, you have the sponsor, you have the mentor.
Yep.
So please tell us a little bit more about how do you negotiate, especially when it's getting harder and harder?
Yeah, that's such a great question. That's like a whole nother hour session. And there are some people, you know, there are great people doing work on that. You know, I think about the Women Don't Ask book and all of those things. I think your point about negotiation is hugely important. And if you're crystal clear about your strengths and are promoting those strengths throughout the organization, and linking those strengths to business results, the negotiation gets easier. There's nothing that says, and I'm looking at some of the senior execs down front, how much do you negotiate in your job? Like every day, right? It's something that you need practice at, you need to work on with people. And if you're doing the verbalization of your strengths throughout your career, it's less of an issue. But it's like a whole new session. I'll talk to you after and give you some resources for that. I'm so sorry, but we are out of time. It was such a delight and a pleasure. Thanks for hanging in there with me, and have a great rest of the day. And come see me at 3:00.